Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the IT Babble podcast. Tony, I don't know about your weather in Mississippi, but it is a glorious day in Indianapolis.
Well, it's kind of overcast here, but it's at least it's warm now. I just need like 4 days without rain so I can salvage my lawn.
Well, we've had some rain. Our lawns are still dead here still, but it's going to be almost 70 degrees today in Indianapolis, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's warm here. It's like really warm. So
nice.
Just need to dry the swamp out in the back there.
There you go.
So I can, the mother-in-law's coming in like a month, and she is from Canada. So she spends all of her time outside here, and I need to like pressure wash the back porch and just get it all cleaned up. And, I need to get an extension ladder and take down some wisteria. Things taking over my house.
Yeah, that stuff will take over anything. That's how we should colonize worlds. We should just drop that stuff on worlds and just let it grow.
I did plant it, though, so it could be eradicated. So I planted it in a special way so I could eliminate it with a chainsaw.
Well, that's good.
But I don't want to do that yet. I just want to cut some pieces off. So.
All right. Tony, I got some sad news. Are you ready?
What happened?
My $14 on-ear headphones from Amazon, after almost 10 years, are starting to fall apart.
Whoa.
Yeah, the ear cups, they have like a pleather on them for comfort and aesthetics, and the pleather is falling off. So every time I got my headphones on, but as soon as I take it off, I'll have this black stuff on my shirt and in my hair, on my chest. And once that black stuff is off, it's also to protect the foam on the ear cups. I'm sure that that's going to start to deteriorate and fall apart. And Amazon doesn't sell them anymore. You can find them on Amazon, but the Amazon Basics on-ear headphones are not sold.
Have you checked out Temu?
I've seen commercials for Temu.
If you listen for real,
all right.
If you sign up for Temu,
when you first
sign up, if it's your first time, I just did this. You can get a pair of Lenovo. They're like AirPods.
Yeah.
For $2.75.
What?
I'm not kidding. I told Kendra, like, that's my wife, to try it, and and it worked. Like, it doesn't ship quickly. You get it in like 7 to 10 days, but you get a package, and inside they're Lenovo like AirPods, just like Apple ones, and it's hilarious. They pair easily, but they pair to your device in Chinese, which is funny. And the commercial on YouTube like sold me. This guy, these two Chinese people were arguing, and the lady's like, "Why isn't anyone buying these headphones?" And the guy was like, "Because they're too cheap and people think they're fake." And
yeah,
she's like, "They're not fake. They're made by Lenovo." And they are. They're Lenovo little AirPods or whatever they're called. And I'll tell you what, the sound quality is really good.
Well, I'm looking for a wired version.
Well, I just wonder if Temu also has – so they have that. My point is, if you sign up, you get a crazy deal on something for your first purchase. So maybe Temu has those older headphones.
They might, or something similar. I mean, these are not you can find headphones like
this. Well,
what
about mine? These are on Amazon for $15.
Oh,
these Sonys.
Those are – yes, I've seen those.
And there's two – you can – $15 gets you a microphone, which I'm not using right now, but actually it's pretty good.
Okay.
And $10 was no microphone.
Oh, even better. I think
but
I might do
super,
that.
But they're super comfortable. Hold on. Let me demonstrate here.
Yeah, so, demonstrating.
Patrick actually can see me even though we don't do a video
for
the podcast. But he can actually see me. So I'm going to demonstrate for him by taking these off. Hold on.
All right. Oh, see, they got the swivel ear cups. That's important to me, because our ears are not, you know, head cups that swivel make it more comfortable, much more comfortable.
Yeah, so they're super comfortable. So I don't know. I have one pair at home that has no microphone, and I have one pair at work that has a microphone, and I keep one pair at work and one pair at home, and it's all I use for podcasting.
Yeah.
Anytime I have to do video editing or whatever, And this is the same kind of Sony headphone I have had since, like, man, like 2010. Yeah. I just keep replacing them. I mean, eventually they wear. Like, they don't break. They just wear. It's the pleather,
yeah,
just like you said.
Yeah, yeah. And when you get higher-end headphones, you get other features, like you can remove and replace the cord. You can remove and replace the ear pads. But for podcasting, I don't need anything super fancy.
These headphones do not have noise canceling technology, no. But I'll tell you what, they are insulated. I don't hear anything.
That's pretty good.
So, yeah, just don't buy Beats. Are Beats still made? Do people still sell Beats?
They do, but Apple has marginalized them. They're good. They're like the mailman's stepchild or whatever. They're not talked about. they're there, but people just don't talk about them anymore. So
all right, well, good. I never really liked Beats. I thought they were over the top, just too big.
And I had some Beats once, and the quality was not. They lasted a year. They just, you know. Anyway, yeah. But that was me. Maybe I just had a bad pair. But my Amazon On Air headphones are going strong, almost 10 years.
Check out
old.
Temu.
I'm checking out Temu. What my concern is, Tony, is I've seen Wish.com and I've seen videos about Wish.com.
No.
And they are totally so.
So I looked into this. Just okay. So here's another reason to bring up Temu if you work in education. They have loads of teacher supplies that you can buy in bulk.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
It is like okay. So if you live in China, you have access to Taobao. Now you can technically Taobao in America, but it's difficult.
It's difficult.
Taobao makes Amazon look like the corner store.
It does.
That's how much bigger it is. Mm-hmm. And at Taobao, you can buy like a can of coconut water to be delivered to your office, or you can buy 5,000 cans of coconut water to be delivered to your office.
Yeah.
So you actually can buy in large quantities. Temu is Taobao to America.
And they're
sourcing all over Asia, stocking up in the US. Shipping is slower. So the trade-off is there's no next day, but you can buy in bulk. So for example, for my son, his teacher said, like, he's left-handed and she wants him to have more left-handed practice. So we purchased, 60 puzzles, like 100-piece puzzles for like 75 cents each.
Oh, that's, wow, that's amazing.
And then we purchased a stack of writing materials for left-handed kids for like $15. It would be enough for like an entire classroom.
They actually have
teacher material, like, so some teachers buy their own stuff and get reimbursed by their school.
Yeah.
So if you're on Amazon, what we noticed with these headphones, now that you've taken me down this tangent, Patrick, I thought it would be a quick topic.
I thought so too.
I started looking up other stuff and figured out Amazon resellers are purchasing from Temu in bulk and reselling on Amazon.
With a markup.
With a markup. So we've been finding the exact same products with like a 30 to 40% markup on Amazon.
Okay.
So because you can buy it in bulk, like you as an Amazon reseller at your house can order the stuff on Temu. It's going to drop ship to wherever you're at, but you're going to get a huge bulk order.
Yep.
And then you can resell it on Amazon because most people don't know about Temu yet.
It was they had a commercial on the at the Super Bowl for Temu. And I was just like, I don't know about this. But if it is sourcing from Taobao, yeah, for folks, for China, Tony and I were in China at the same time, and Amazon was actually trying to break into the Chinese market, and they had Amazon.cn, and it died. It just no traction. It couldn't.
Even Taobao somehow, even though like it had the worst English translation on the planet, it didn't matter the way they set it up. You could just use the app on your phone and you could figure it out.
You could. Yeah.
And it was all integrated with like your WeChat wallet. And so it didn't need access to your bank account at all. You just top up your wallet on your phone. So it's all kind of decentralized that way. And you just sit on your phone. I worked with a guy, and I'm not kidding, this guy, it was kind of a joke. He got a Taobao delivery at work every day. Because he wanted to pick up the stuff and then take it home with him on his scooter. And so like one day we shared the same office, like a case of like 24 coconut water showed up. And I was like, what is this? And he's like, oh, it's my coconut water. I'm like, do you drink coconut water? He's like, no, but I thought I would try it. And that's just like how it went. And I worked with somebody who she didn't know where she could buy avocados in Shanghai, oh, even though there was right. a lady known as the avocado lady. So this is a whole other story. But anyway, she was ordering like she was having one avocado delivered to her apartment a week. So these are extreme cases, but you can't do that in the United States. That's my point. Yeah. You don't have the delivery system, the density of people.
Yeah.
And so to build a system that can serve people from the person who wants one avocado to the person who wants 5,000 cans of coconut water, you have to have something completely different than Amazon. And yep. that's what they have.
Yeah.
And, Alibaba is kind of similar, except it's mostly business facing or bulk buying. Like it, you know, you can go on Alibaba right now and order like 10,000 nails
yeah,
like for
yeah.
your deck.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, so, 5,000 keyboards.
It's kind of a happy middle. Like it's got consumer products, but you can still buy in bulk. Well, so
I'm going to give it and these aren't dead yet, so I've got a couple months with them. So
sign up for Temu.
All right.
Get those free Lenovo earbud things and then use those as a gift to someone this year who like you don't really like, but you're supposed to buy them a gift.
Yeah.
And they'll think that you spent a lot of money on them.
But really, I didn't spend hardly any, like just a couple dollars.
And that'll be the joke.
I like it.
Like, these were basically free.
All right. So, and just to be clear, we have no sponsorships from Temu.
No.
We get no money.
I know a Finnish guy named Temu.
Oh, that's kind of cool. That's kind of
cool. Yeah, and like Omar, he was in the Finnish military.
Oh, all right.
So there we go. So I know a Finnish guy named Temu. That's my only connection.
We have a kind of a light agenda today, which is fine because we spent so much time on headphones. It's fine. We're going to talk about Tony is on a new committee, but we've been talking about AI, and we didn't talk about this, but Open AI has an image generator. Like you give it a prompt, and it'll generate pretty decent looking images. And there was an independent comic book writer who created all the images for the comic book using, I believe it was through OpenAI's, what is that called? Like Lucid or, well, no, it's not Lucid. What is that thing? I forget what it's called. I'm looking it up real quick. DALL-E 2. That's what it is. DALL-E 2. I think that's what she used. And she got it copyrighted. And then she didn't hide it. She's like, these images were all generated through AI, and they're not crazy. Like there is a theme, there is a color theme to them. Like the character looks very similar from Pain to Pain. I haven't seen all the images, and I haven't read the comic book. But she applied. You know, it's her work, so she applied for a copyright for it, and was granted a copyright. But when the copyright agency in America confirmed that these were AI generated images, that she was allowed to keep the copyright for the story, but not for the images. So the images are kind of open source. Anybody could take those images and not claim them as their own, but do whatever they want with them. It's not protected, which is kind of interesting. Her lawyer argues that the copyright agency has made a mistake and that these AI-generated images are more like photographs, because she would generate them one after another to try to find the right one for the right pain, kind of a thing. So so it's like taking pictures. You know, you can't control the sun, you can't control the lighting, you can't control what people or animals or the world puts in frame for you. You can control the camera and taking the picture, and that's kind of what, you know, she would do lots and lots and lots of searches and generation of images to find the right images for the right pain. And so I think it's really interesting. So here we have copyright. America has said that AI generated work cannot be copyrighted, but as an artist, she's saying it should be able to be copyrighted, that she's using AI as a tool like using a camera or Photoshop or something.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, we don't know. This stuff's going to have to be litigated for a while. I mean, that's where we're at now.
Yeah.
What does this mean for you if you're like in a classroom or you're working with kids or whatever? This is what it means. If you if you're doing something that is going to be externally judged or graded, then your students really can't use this technology yet. Okay. So yep. If you're IB art for their final exposition, you can't do this. You can't submit it as like a work of your own.
Yes, correct.
There may be a way around it. If you want to use it, if you have a creative way to use it, you need to get permission in writing first. That's really it. I think that's where people are kind of missing the point. I think that my weeks of constantly asking people, have they checked the terms of service, are starting to pay off a little bit.
Good.
Hey, have you checked the terms of service on that?
Yeah.
This one person has now written like their second guide for using ChatGPT, and it's still, she still will not acknowledge that she can't actually use any of this with students.
Because you in know, terms of
she,
service,
she says, 18 yeah, she years sent or older. She sent me these long like arguments, and I'm like, I don't really know what the argument is here. Where you're living in the world, it's illegal.
Yeah.
So why are you arguing with me? I don't really care if you do it. You should just be aware that there's some risk. You know, I personally don't care.
Yeah.
But I do care about students who might be encouraged to do something, and then they get they get a hit on their IB diploma. Maybe, I don't know if the AP art curriculum requires, I'm sure it requires producing a portfolio. I'm sure your portfolio could be at risk of being graded if the work is considered not original.
Yeah.
So I think any of this needs to be considered. And again, if you want to do it, if you have a cool, like right now as we're talking, here's something that you could do.
All right, let's do
it. You could have the AI generate graphic art for part of a story, and you could tell it to generate two characters, one character, whatever, and the other character, leave it blank. And then you, as the artist, could print that out onto some type of material, and you could do the second character. So it's a mixed kind of media project where you're doing a digital print, and if you could print it so it gets onto something like canvas, some kind of fabric, and then you actually use paint or something else to do the other character to fill in the story.
That's interesting.
That would be very cool, very interesting concept. Where you're working with the AI, and you're going to be judged on just the pieces that you've added, and they will be very clear because you're using a different material. They're, you know, it's like the AI stuff is printed and your stuff is painted. That would be very cool. You get approval for that, and then you're off and running. But you can't just submit it. I remember very, very vividly going into the corporate headquarters in Dubai of the GEMS education company. They owned a bunch of schools.
Yep.
And there were all of these really nice like paintings from Lord of the Rings, like the trilogy. there was like 10 of them. And I was like, I thought it was like really good. You know, I'm like, oh. And so I asked about it, and like, well, a teacher allowed a couple of their students to submit these for their IB art final, and obviously you can't do that, so we're appealing, and we're gonna hang these up around our offices because they do look really nice. But it's the same thing, like you have to be really careful. And they had reinterpreted the Lord of the Rings characters, and it wasn't like a copy, they had just used the likeness. So had they contacted the IB first and said, hey, we have a really good idea for a project, but we want to include this character that already exists, but it's original work otherwise. And here's a sketch of what it's going to kind of look like. Because they were very big landscapes. These were big works. And so,
yeah. Very cool. That's, yeah. And I just, there are teachers out there who might use AI to generate lesson plans, or maybe they, you know, you write for a blog or whatever and they use AI to generate. That means maybe that stuff isn't as protected as you think, as for your IP. It's just something to be aware of. I think that it's like, I think you're absolutely right, Tony. This stuff has got to be litigated. And who knows, it might eventually, certain works might be allowed in, but it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a long time. So it's just kind of cool. I saw that article on The Verge. I got it linked in the show notes for anybody who is curious and wants to check it out. It's there for you to read. I think it's certainly an interesting argument. Yeah, it's just another way that AI is kind of disrupting our you know, worlds and industry and stuff like that. So it's something to keep listening for, seeing what's happening. It's just kind of cool. Yeah, you know what else?
Agreed.
You know what else is cool, Tony? Committees are very cool.
Oh, that's right. So all of my weeks of telling people to check terms of service, Patrick.
Yep.
Ended up with me getting a phone call from ATLAS, the Association of Technology Leaders and Independent School Schools, and they asked me if I would join a committee to help write policies and procedures for using AI in school. So we have until the end of this month. There's a task force, maybe 18, 20 people divided up to do different jobs. I'm on a team of like 6 people. And we're writing policies and procedures for students, staff, kind of if you're adopting any kind of AI tool, you know, steps to evaluate it on your network, all the stuff that no one wants to read. That's what I'm working on. So it's paid off, Patrick. I'm now part of a small group
that's
of people
good.
Who are writing rules that no one will read.
Well, that's so interesting. So the ATLAS conference, it's a nation, it's an American organization, and it's, they have a conference every year, and it's all over the place. This year, it's pretty close to me. It's up in Michigan. It's not too far away from Indiana. And I'm going to go to it. But I got an email about this, Tony. I got an email about this is going to be like a special session that they're offering. That they've tacked on to the conference. A special
and that session. Came out of this task force. So
yeah.
What happened in the first task force meeting is someone was like, if we're doing all this work and most of us are going to this conference, we want to be able to meet together. And at first they were like, oh, you know, it'll have to be, you know, casual, like between sessions, because we didn't really plan for it. And some other people kind of pushed back and they're like, look, if we're putting this out for hundreds of schools and this is the hottest topic, we need it set up. We need a special session. So they did. They've organized it.
Yeah.
I'd really like to go. I don't think I can go. But plus, if I go, I'll be hated, Patrick. People will be like, there he is. He's the one that posted the terms of service after I spent 3 weeks writing that ebook.
It's going to be great. My students, they don't need a calculator. They just need ChatGPT. And Tony ruined it for me. Yeah, Tony, you are the You hate AI. Oh, that's going to be the theme. Tony DiPreto hates AI.
And I don't. And I have been using ChatGPT to do a couple things. First off, I've been using it to write a very cool piece of software, which I'm not ready to unveil yet. But it helped me work through problems of undocumented code. So you may not realize this, but like, a lot of the code out there that Google and other people say, hey, if you use these tools, you can add extra features to your Google Drive or to whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
And you get into it and realize the person who wrote the library of code that you're supposed to use hasn't updated it for 4 years. And
that can cause some problems.
But here's the thing. Most things within the same ecosystem or environment are predictable. Like, if you walk into a kitchen in Kentucky or a kitchen in Indianapolis or a kitchen in Mississippi, you're going to be able to figure out how to use the refrigerator, the stove, everything else, even though they might be different brands, right?
Yeah.
They're within the same environment. You can understand them. And programming is the same. So Google has programming standards that all their engineers have to use. So if something hasn't been updated, it's likely that you can figure it out if you can find the new standards from something else you're not using, if that makes sense. So that's what it helps you do, because it knows all of the libraries that Google has that you can use for programming. So you can say, well, what if I were doing this? What would that look like? And you don't have to like constantly go through these documents, like tons and tons of documents. And you can ask it for an example. And this doesn't write your program for you, but it really helps you put it. It lets you see the samples in the way you want to see them. So I write programs differently than certain people. So I want to see structure differently. So I start working with the AI and then I'm like, okay, I want you to structure it this way and that way. Through this process though, you know what I figured out, Patrick?
What's that?
I don't think these prompts are real. Have you seen all these prompts people do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the prompts aren't for the AI. I think the prompts are for the humans so that their brain goes in the right direction for the question.
You think that it's kind of guiding you to asking better questions?
Yes, because I don't use any prompts at all. I'm just really direct. I'm like, so for the other day I had it for, I needed some sample data, which is annoying to create.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just said, please create a worksheet that shows times tables from 1 to 10.
All right.
That's all I did.
Yeah.
And it created a worksheet. And I was like, please create another worksheet in a different format. Please create another worksheet that looks like HTML tables. That's all you have to do. You don't have to say act as a programmer, act as a spreadsheet, act as a writer. You don't have to do that.
Okay.
You just have to, your language has to be specific. But so I'm not saying the prompts are bad, but I don't think the prompts are real. I don't think you need them.
I got it. I hear. Yeah. You can, as long as you're direct and concise, it will probably return favorable results.
Yeah. And so anyway, like that's kind of I'm excited about working with this team of people, because I think the overall result, like there's a group that's working on just, okay, all things being equal, AI is allowed. How do we use it in the classroom? Like that's a different kind of person, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm hesitant to do that. They're not. And they're going from a theoretical standpoint, like, yeah, right now, but in a year it's gonna be fine. So that's where they're at. So they're like future thinking. And then some of us are like risk and how do you sell this to your admin thinking?
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting. I think the teachers here who are still talking about it, but it's not that. I think the what is it? The fear, like the knee jerk reaction. I think that has kind of gone, and now people are just kind of saying okay, because they've seen evidence of ChatGPT or other AIs like returning incorrect results, like just blatantly incorrect, and poor examples. Oh, I was asking ChatGPT about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and I got it to say that Charlie was a more egalitarian leader than Willy Wonka, and that he released all the Oompa Loompas and hired people in the community to better support the economy of the community, and he lowered the prices of chocolate so people with less money could afford to buy chocolate. And his family moved into with him at the chocolate factory so they could share all the profits together as a family.
Cool.
I don't believe that happened in there, but it presented that as if, you know, that was like in that Roald Dahl had written that in the book, but it was definitely not in the book. So,
well, yeah. I think they kind of are missing the boat here when it comes to this technology. It isn't about giving you things that mm-hmm. you need. It's about helping you extend your personal processing capacity. It is like an extra brain. It's not
it's not there to replace your creation. Yeah. It's not to create.
So like I'm talking to you, I have a meeting. So my time is finite.
Yep.
So I'm in a finite sphere of existence, even if I'm in a simulation, which I believe possibly that I am. So
that's another topic.
So, but I have a finite amount of time. So while I'm talking to you, at the same time, I need to work a schedule out for like a new robotics class. So before I start my conversation with you, I give the AI that information and I walk away and we have our meeting, and then I go back to it and I look and think about it. The first results aren't going to be good, and then I ask it to refine, and then I do my next task.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it refines, we go from sending just static information, let's just say like really boring information,
yep,
back and forth, to, okay, we have these two results. Which one do you think will work best? You get to that point and you get an opinion based off the information you've exchanged back and forth. And then you take that opinion and you evaluate it and say, when I make this decision. So that's kind of the best use for it. Using it to look stuff up on the internet isn't really a good idea. And it's not a good idea for a lot of reasons. I mean, at these AI systems, and I went to a little meeting, and there was an AWS engineer explaining stuff. They have controls and structure.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to get access to the infinite amount of information, yeah, that's out there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I think a misconception is.
Yeah. One of the questions I always ask various, whatever AI, I always ask it, I say, what are the best computers for $1,000? Because at that price point, there are tremendous amount of choice. And it's very interesting. The results that I get back, based on what it says, you can almost kind of, you're like, okay, it sounds like from this website or from this website or from this website, but it doesn't, you feel like, I always get the sense that it's a very limited view of what it's pulling from. Like it just finds a couple and then it just goes. It doesn't give you a wide range of reviews, so. But man, what are you typing on over there? It is.
I'm sorry. I'm making some notes. I have like an old school Lenovo keyboard. Sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry, people. When I have AI inspiration, I have to write stuff down because I'm working on this committee and I'm behind on my like writing assignments. So
Tony, come on.
I'm supposed to do it today, and I was just like, oh,
put down the power.
That's a good idea. All right. I've let go of the keyboard.
All right. But yeah. I don't know. It's cool. It's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to continue my terms of service trolling for a couple more weeks. And once the Atlas thing is published, I will stop the terms of service trolling. And I'll just link people to the policy and procedure document.
You should never stop. Because their terms of service are so readable and so straightforward.
There was somebody yesterday posted something. And I said, what age groups will this apply to? And they were like, that's a really good question. And they gave me this full, it was like three paragraphs of answer. And I was like, I literally, after that answer, just posted a link to the terms of service. That's all I do. I don't argue with people. I just post it.
And it's number one. It's the very first.
It's at the very top.
It's the very top. You don't even have to scroll down. It's just there. And it's super clear. So whenever people ask me, they're like, why have you blocked it for your students? I was like, none of our students are 18. Not one.
I know.
They can't use it. They are violating the terms of service.
It wasn't even a big thing at my school. Everybody was like, okay, we'll block it on campus, and if parents want to enable it at home, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah, let them, I don't understand how it's an argument.
Yeah, if we violated our Google terms of service, Google has the right to suspend or take away all of our services indefinitely. Like they can just do it. They're like, here's our terms of service, and you violated. You used it to run a Ponzi scheme. I'm not running a Ponzi scheme, Tony. but you get the idea.
I'm gonna start using that argument Do you think it's a good idea to use Google Workspaces to run a Ponzi scheme? No. Do you think it's a good idea to use ChatGPT for kids under 18? Because both of those things are a violation of the terms of service.
There you go.
It's totally different.
No, it's not. I think it even says in the Google one somewhere, it's like you can't use their Gmail to like mislead people or to scheme them out of money or something like that.
Sorry, last thing here.
Yep.
Let me see if I have I'm pretty sure I have a screenshot. So I installed I need to click again. Installed the ChatGTP client for my Linux machine. Because I do find the client stay online, you know, longer.
Yeah.
Than that.
I still have trouble getting into ChatGPT on the web browser.
All right. So I installed it, and it gave me a little accept, you know, like, will you accept this message type thing? Like, you accept these terms?
Yeah.
ChatGPT, how we collect data. Conversations may be reviewed by our AI trainers to improve our systems. Please don't share any sensitive information in your conversations. It says that now when you install the client.
Nice. Oh, okay. Well,
but again, what did I point out when this came out? That none of your stuff is actually private.
Yeah.
I was like, this stuff is being logged. It's being logged on the back end, and it's being studied.
Yep.
And then here's like another one. Patrick, to your understanding,
okay,
where does the ChatGPT training data stop?
Where does it stop?
Yeah, so what year cutoff do they have for the data?
I believe it is January of 2021.
That's correct, Patrick. Okay. That's correct.
All right.
So a friend, I was, you know, a buddy asked me a question. He's looking at relocating to Thailand, and he was asking me, like, if he wanted to live in Bangkok on the same kind of, you know, at the same lifestyle level he's living now, how much money would he need to make?
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I haven't used ChatGPT for finance conversion. I bet it's good. So I decided to put it in. Now, Patrick, I'm expecting it to tell me the exchange rate, right?
Yes.
In 2021. As of February 21st, 2023, the exchange rate between the U.S. dollar and the Thai baht is approximately $1.30.98 Thai baht. It definitely has access to current data. Definitely.
Whoa, that is so weird. But it can't tell you what time it is in Mississippi.
Well, it lies to you.
Yeah.
It lies to you. Like, it's been programmed to tell you if you ask it to say 2021. Now, they may have opened it up, and it's just not, like, you don't know about it yet. They may have opened it up, but, like, I don't know. Last week it didn't do this.
Man. Well, I know
that, I asked it. I tried to get it to give me stock picks. I'm not stupid.
They added it to Microsoft Bing, and then Microsoft throttled it back because it would limit how many questions you could ask it. Just like it does on the web browser for ChatGPT. You can only ask it so many questions. I guess some people were just sitting there for like hours just talking with it. And so they would limit that. And then they got all sorts of, you're trying to make us pay for it, which, yes, they do want you to pay for it. But no, I think they're just trying to, you know, make it more usable for everybody and not have it crash. But
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. All right. But that's it. That's all we got in our agenda. That's it. Anything else, Tony?
Nope. I'm just going to try to use ChatGPT to figure out how to short some stocks.
That's okay, perfect. That's awesome. That's awesome. Be sure to short.
Teach your kids to do that. They'll be wealthy before they're 21.
Yeah.
Forget all this other stuff.
College is not worth it.
Just use it to short the market.
Perfect. There's plenty of things out there to short. Plenty of things, I'm sure. All right. Anyway, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there, people.